welcome once again to Radio In Vivo, your link to the Triangle Science community, here on WCOM-LP Chapel Hill in Carrboro. This is Ernie Hood. I am a freelance science writer, and each week here on the program, we bring you cutting-edge information about what's going on in science here in the Triangle area, one of the world's leading hubs of scientific research and development. We welcome your comments or questions via email at radioinvivo@earthlink.net. And we do have a website for the program, which you can find at radioinvivo.net. You can access all of our past programs on that website, and so we certainly encourage you to check it out. And Radio In Vivo is also available as a podcast on iTunes. All you have to do is go to the iTunes site, search Radio In Vivo, and it'll bring you right to the podcast site, and you can subscribe. And, of course, we've always had podcasts available on the station's website as well at communityradio.coop. And this is WCOM-LP, Chapel Hill and Carrboro. Radio In Vivo is underwritten by the Hamner Centers for Health Sciences in Research Triangle Park. The Hamner is a renowned leader in environmental health sciences research and education. For more than 25 years, the Hamner has contributed science that guides sound regulatory decisions and protects the health of the public. WCOM and Radio In Vivo thank the Hamner for its support. Radio In Vivo is also underwritten by the National Evolutionary Synthesis Center in Durham. NESENT is a collaborative effort of Duke University, the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, and North Carolina State University, and is sponsored by the National Science Foundation. NESENT's mission is to facilitate broadly synthetic research to address fundamental questions in evolutionary biology by providing an environment for fertile interactions among scientists. Radio In Vivo and WCOM thank NESENT for its support. And last but far from least, Radio In Vivo is also underwritten by the North Carolina Association for Biomedical Research. Since it was founded in 1989, the NCABR has been fulfilling its mission to promote public understanding and support for bioscience research and careers. To learn more about the benefits of bioscience for the future of North Carolina, visit NCABR's homepage, www.ncabr.org, and its clearinghouse of bioscience resources, www.aboutbioscience.org. WCOM and Radio In Vivo thank the North Carolina Association for Biomedical Research for its support. Well, this week on Radio In Vivo, it's a great pleasure for me to welcome Dr. Enriqueta Bond, and I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, who has been president of the Burroughs Wellcome Fund since 1994. She has announced that she will retire from that position next June. So we wanted to be sure to get her here on Radio In Vivo to tell us about her career and the Burroughs Wellcome Fund, which has been a significant funder of scientific research and education since 1955. Keita received her undergraduate degree from Wellesley College, her MA from the University of Virginia, and her PhD in molecular biology and biochemical genetics from Georgetown University. She is a member of the Institute of Medicine, a fellow of the American Association for the Advancement of Science, and a member of the American Society for Microbiology and the American Public Health Association. She serves as vice chair of the Council of the Institute of Medicine, and she chairs the Board of Scientific Counselors for the National Center for Infectious Diseases, as well as chairing the Institute of Medicine's Clinical Research Roundtable, as well as serving on the boards of several other organizations. Prior to being named president of the Burroughs Wellcome Fund in 1994, Keita was on the staff of the Institute of Medicine beginning in 1979 and became the Institute's executive officer in 1989. Keita, it's a distinct pleasure to welcome you to Radio In Vivo.
Thank you, Ernie. It's my pleasure to be with you.
And let's start out by just orienting our listeners a little bit who may not be all that familiar with the Burroughs Wellcome Fund or even the Burroughs Wellcome Company. Would you share with us some of the rich history of the company and the trust and the fund that bear the names of Silas Burroughs and Henry Welcome.
Well, Silas Burroughs and Henry Welcome were both Americans, actually, who went to the UK and they started a pharmaceutical company together. And they were way ahead of their time in believing that science is the basis of good drugs and invested heavily in research from the very beginning. Burroughs died about 15 years into the partnership, and Henry Welcome was the one who grew the large pharmaceutical company. Mm-hmm. In 1955, the U.S. company, which was called the Burroughs Welcome Company, was allowed to begin a foundation, and that was the beginning of the Burroughs Welcome Fund. In the late 1980s, the Welcome Trust, which owned the company as a result of Henry Welcome leaving his entire company to the Welcome Trust when he died, decided to sell shares in the company publicly and began then to provide some endowment for the Welcome, for the Burroughs Welcome Fund. So we were eventually spun out of the company, and eventually, of course, the whole company was sold to Glaxo. The Burroughs Welcome Company became Glaxo Welcome.
That was a merger.
and then eventually, actually, Glaxo Welcome merged with SmithKline Beecham, so it became GlaxoSmithKline. So we no longer have any relationship with any company, although, of course, we celebrate our legacy from this wonderful company, the Burroughs Welcome Company.
I see. So the foundation, the fund itself, was essentially spun off to be an independent entity when that first merger with Glaxo took place, roughly at the same time
period? Yes, that's correct. Since 1993, we have been totally independent of the company.
I see, but the endowment originally came from Burroughs Welcome itself.
It came actually from two pieces. We got a $30 million from the Burroughs Welcome Company and an endowment that they had for the foundation at that time. Mm-hmm. And we received $400 million from the Welcome Trust, which, of course, is a much larger, it's now one of the largest UK charities that funds biomedical research, with an endowment of about $21 billion. So they're very much bigger than we are.
I see. And when the spinoff happened in 93, that's essentially when you were brought in as the fund's first full-time president. Is that correct?
That's correct. It was a wonderful job. I was so lucky.
And what attracted you to that position after, as I mentioned in my introduction, you spent many years at the Institute of Medicine? What pulled you away from that?
Well, it was really the opportunity to build an institution. There had been an institution before, but it had been very small, and the additional assets and the making of a independent organization which could set its agenda, have an independent board of directors, hire staff, develop program, all of that was just a wonderful opportunity. And the nice thing was that, having been at the Institute of Medicine, which is part of the National Academy of Sciences, involved in doing health sciences policy work, I really had a good idea of what were some of the problems within the research enterprise and who were some of the other big players in funding health research. So that gave me a great vantage point from which to sort of pick what are the niches that the Burroughs Welcome Fund wants to really be in, because government funding far overshadows what a private foundation can do in the United States. The NIH alone has a budget of close to $30 billion a year. The Burroughs Welcome Fund, now with our added resources in the growth of the stock market over the last 13 years, has an $800 million endowment. We give away close to $40 million a year. That's a big difference from $30 billion. So we really have to be a niche player in this whole enterprise.
I see. And when the fund became an independent entity and when you came on board, did its mission change in any way at that time with your vision and leadership?
Well, one of the things is that we've really had a pretty constant mission. I'd say every 5 years, the board really takes a step back and looks at our mission and looks at our strategies for carrying out our mission. So we keep looking at that. It hasn't changed a whole lot. It really is very faithful to what Henry Welcome said in his will when he set up the Welcome Trust. We really are about advancing the biomedical sciences through the support of research and education. And as I say, we try to take a look at that every 5 years.
I see. And do you still work closely with the Wellcome Trust people?
We do have a collaboration that has been ongoing. We will be hosting them. The two of their directors are going to be coming over here in a couple of weeks, and we hope to maintain our historic ties with them and continue our collaborative work.
I see. Well, again, I'd like to kind of drill down into the mission as you've described it a little bit and share with our listeners kind of the overview of what the importance is of the Burroughs Wellcome Fund to research and education here in North Carolina and nationally. Am I correct in my understanding, and do correct me if I'm wrong, that the Burroughs Wellcome Fund typically doesn't fund specific research as such, but tends more to award grants to individual investigators to support their research efforts? Is that typically the approach?
Yes, Ernie. I think our board was really brilliant in developing two strategies for carrying out that mission that I mentioned. One is really to invest in the career development of young scientists, and secondly, to develop investigators in areas of science that are undervalued or underfunded. And so really, when you look at it, it's a human capital. It's an investment in people. Mm-hmm. It's that kind of a strategy rather than saying we're going to support research per se. We're going to try to invest in young people who can give their careers a head start and who will take risks as a result of our support.
I see. So that really is a very different approach from NIH, for example.
That's true. They are much more about providing support for infrastructure and especially for providing support through their R01 mechanism, as it's called, which is really about research. I do have to say that Elias Zerhouni, the current director, has tried to set aside some dollars that can be invested in people. I think that is a wonderful strategy for him to take, but it's easier for a foundation to really take those bets on younger people.
Sure. Well, has that approach that you've taken become more important than ever as it's become ever more difficult to actually obtain NIH grants for research projects themselves over the past several years? I know that although the money is expanding, the budget has basically been flat, and there's been a lot more applications compared to how many grants are awarded. So the whole atmosphere there has gotten much tighter in the last few years.
It has. I think we see more pressure on our awards as a result of the fact that the NIH budget hasn't been growing like it had been in the past. And so we feel our strategies, what we're always looking for is the niche areas, particularly where NIH hasn't gone. And when NIH does go where we've been, we were really delighted this past year that the Pathways to Independence, which is a new award that NIH is making called the K99R01 Bridging Award, really copies almost exactly an award program that we had in place called the Career Awards in the Biomedical Sciences. NIH, we were only able to give 20 awards approximately per year. NIH is now going to be making about 175 of those awards a year. And the reason they copied it is because we were able to demonstrate that scientists get independent, can begin their independent careers earlier, at least to 3 years earlier through this bridging mechanism. And Zerhouni felt very strongly that that was something he wanted to see happen at NIH. Mm-hmm. So what we've done, and this demonstrates sort of how we look for those niches, is we've changed the focus of our program to emphasize medical scientists, that is, physician scientists or clinical scientists, believing that the NIH would not be able to easily select in that category. And in fact, I saw Zerhouni just recently at the Lasker Awards ceremony, and he said, "We're really happy you're in that space. We haven't been able to direct our dollars as well into that area." And it just shows how there is a need for foundations to keep looking for those niche areas where they can demonstrate, be catalytic, and maybe then demonstrate that there's a need for support in that particular area.
Right. And then hopefully, as has happened with this, NIH comes along and copies you.
Exactly. We think that's the best form of flattery.
There you go. Well, the young investigators, my understanding is that that is a particularly vulnerable point in their careers when they've been mentored up to a certain point. If they aren't able to make that leap to independence and having their own laboratories and pursuing their own research agendas, that's when we lose them.
Exactly. And so it's terribly important, especially for physician scientists who have so many other options. They can go into service, et cetera, teach. We really feel strongly that we need to be supporting them and to keep them in research. So we really have two programs that are mostly focused on physician scientists. One is this Career Awards in the Medical Sciences, which is the bridging award between the postdoc and the assistant professor. But we have another award, our Translational Award, that supports that translation from bench to patient, sort of that early phase one area of research where we feel we need more emphasis at the late assistant, early associate professor. And that award program is really meant to buy back the physician's time for research, because there's been a lot of pressure with the managed care and all the turmoil in the healthcare side of our industry, so to speak, that those physicians were being forced to do more and more service. So that is exactly the time when they are mentoring the next generation of scientists. So that award is meant to keep them in research, provide the mentors, and really anchor that piece of the research enterprise.
And those investigators are at the points in their careers where they're starting to really make some significant discoveries, I would assume.
Well,
it's important to, as you say, buy their time so that they can keep pursuing that important work.
Absolutely.
Do I take it that the support of basic research is also very much an important element in the funding programs?
Yes. Another one of our career awards is what we call the interface. And one of the things that our board members felt very strongly is that if we could draw people who are very well trained in physics, chemistry, engineering, and the computational sciences to address biological questions, that this was an interface that was, quote, undervalued and underfunded, and that individuals with that kind of training would really ask different questions and would open up biology in new ways. And so one of our award programs is very much aimed in that niche, and it is very basic in its, we're looking for basic scientists in physics and chemistry and mathematics to really address basic questions in biology.
I see. Well, that seems very much in keeping with the trend these days, that the big questions that remain to be answered are going to require that multidisciplinary approach.
Exactly. And I think some of the most interesting science always happens at those interfaces. So another one of our programs aimed at the interfaces is at the host pathogen interface. This grew out of long-term support for parasitology and mycology and infectious diseases, and we decided that it was important to sort of leave the bug behind and look at that interface and really focus more on that ongoing interplay between the host, the human, mm-hmm. and the bug that was trying to sort of get a purchase on the host. Right. And that was where new discoveries are needed. And that program is open to assistant at the assistant professor level, and obviously is open to PhDs, is also open to DVMs or physician scientists again.
I see. So that's particularly aimed at new research in infectious diseases.
Exactly.
And that is actually a legacy of the fund and Burroughs Wellcome Company, which, you know, did such groundbreaking and important work in infectious diseases.
Well, that's exactly right. Henry Wellcome was fascinated by tropical medicine, and he started one of the first research laboratories that floated up the Nile, mm-hmm. And did work. And so I think the Wellcome Trust and the Burroughs Wellcome Fund have been known for a lot of work on tropical diseases. And as a matter of fact, one of our great collaborations with the Wellcome Trust was to sequence the malaria genome and to convene a community of scientists who care deeply about malaria and eventually curing malaria and developing vaccines for malaria and all the other things that we need, new drugs for malaria. Mm-hmm. And that has been an ongoing collaboration for many, many years. But it really grows out of that deep interest of Henry Wellcome in tropical medicine.
And of course, we can't let that go without mentioning Doctors Ellian and Hitchings and their important discoveries in antivirals.
Absolutely. I mean, when they were doing their work, nobody thought you could get a drug to do something about viral disease. I mean, that was sort of a mantra. Drugs don't do anything about viruses. It's only vaccines work against viruses. And indeed, they worked on purine and pyrimidine chemistry, and they developed a number of drugs against viruses, but also against cancer and against gout and a lot of other things. And fortunately, were recognized for their work in 1988 with the Nobel Prize.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We're very proud of that legacy.
I can imagine.
And you know, George Hitchings used his Nobel Prize to start the Community Triangle Foundation. It was incubated at the Burroughs Wellcome Fund.
That I did not know. That's
and he used his Nobel to do that. So he was a great community person.
So he wasn't out buying bass boats and
nope.
third homes or anything like that.
He started a foundation, the Triangle Community Foundation.
Which thrives to this day.
Exactly.
Kate, I'd like to ask you a little bit more about the young investigators, because I know that the fund also produces a wide variety of educational materials aimed at those young scientists, with tips on things like giving effective talks and how to obtain tenure, and et cetera, et cetera. Is that another way to support those younger investigators as they develop their careers?
Well, it's really interesting. One of the things that we decided to do is bring our investigators together on a yearly basis, our awardees, so that they could network and we could have opportunities to talk about what they needed and what they needed from us. And the thing that they said over and over again is, you know, we are taught how to do good research by our mentors, but nobody teaches us how to run our labs or how to give a talk or how to write a grant. This was, you understand, 12 to 13 years ago.
Sure.
And so we decided that we would begin to give them workshops on skill development and how to hire and fire and how to get tenure and how to look for your job and how to give a talk and all those kinds of things, and eventually had a wonderful partnership with the Howard Hughes Medical Institute that developed a very sophisticated lab management course. And out of that has grown the desire to put out a series of booklets that are sort of have the Burroughs Welcome Fund imprimatur to help our awardees. I mean, our awardees are largely elite, you know, but we think this is something that ought to happen for all the scientists who are out there in the research enterprise. And we've really been happy to see that universities are doing a very good job in this. Duke, for example, has a wonderful series of programs, and so does the University of North Carolina in this area.
And that is something that has really relatively recently been recognized, perhaps with the fund's leadership as well, that the younger scientists do need that kind of support.
We hope we think we had a real catalytic effect there, but I, you know, you're always a little bit reticent about saying we did it all. I think this was something that was really needed in the system. We did recognize that we moved to try to develop some opportunities in this area, and I think the partnership with HHMI has been especially useful in putting that on the map.
Sure. My guest on Radio In Vivo today is Dr. Kata Bond, who is president of the Burroughs Welcome Fund. And those of you who have been around the triangle for a while don't need any more introduction than that. Kata, I wanted to, you mentioned briefly a while ago about the fund's support for high-risk research. And I'd like to return to that and get you to elaborate on it a little bit, because I know that that's one of those niches where it can, in fact, be difficult for investigators to obtain funding from NIH, given their current infrastructure.
Well, I think our awards, Ernie, are long-term awards. They're 5 years in duration, and they're quite generous awards, and they're to young people. And what we're hoping is that they will use those awards as sort of their risk capital to develop those areas that they would like to go to and give them a little head start in the NIH system. Mm-hmm. So when our advisory committees are interviewing the awardees, they potential awardees, they look for that spark of creativity. They look at what the scientists are proposing to do, and that all sort of goes into the calculation of who is selected.
I see. Can you give us some examples of the type of high-risk, innovative research that the fund has funded?
Well, I can tell you that one marker that we use is who gets what other kinds of awards. And we have just had one of our awardees, Michael Elowitz, who works on signaling, bacterial signaling back and forth to other bacterial communities, which I think we're realizing now has a lot to do with how these bacteria take over certain environments. He's just received a MacArthur Genius Award. So that is really kind of fun for us to see. And we have another awardee who really has done work with zebrafish, which is a whole area that's being developed. And she's looking at the microbiota, the sort of the composition, the bacterial composition of gut. And we all know this is an area that's terribly unknown. And we know that in humans, the floral composition of the gut has a lot to do with your health. And
absolutely,
she's developed this great model organism, the zebrafish, where you can actually see what's going on in the gut.
They're basically transparent.
Exactly.
Right?
And knock out genes and see how that affects the environment interaction here. And again, she is somebody who's received one of these MacArthur Genius Awards. So I think there are some really innovative scientists that we've supported over time.
So are all of your other innovative scientists thinking they're in line for MacArthur Awards now?
Well,
that's the next logical step.
certainly some of them will win that award. I think
if something else, it's confirmation.
Yes, it is confirmation.
You were spotting
that somebody picked
with
a
promise.
Good person. We also, one of our awardees, several of our awardees, won the new NIH Innovator Award, which also is sort of a confirmation again, and one of them won a Pioneer Award. So these are all award other award programs that demonstrate that our committees are picking them young and picking them well.
That's great. Well, Kata, the other pillar of the Borough's Welcome Fund, of course, as you've mentioned, is its substantial support of science education, particularly here in North Carolina. And I'd like to spend a good deal of time talking about that because it is so important. Can you just kind of start us out by tell us about some of the programs that you've established in that arena?
Well, that is an area that's been really remarkable, Ernie. We started out, the Burroughs Wellcome Company, as I told you, gave us $30 million of our endowment, and they asked us to really look at this education space for use of those dollars. And so when we asked our board of directors sort of what got them interested in science, they all said, look, what hooked us was an informal science experience of some kind. Mm-hmm. So we started out with a rather modest program called the Student Science Enrichment Program, which funded these hands-on kinds of activities for middle and high school students. And as we got involved in that grant-making process, our advisory committee again said, look, there's nobody championing science and math education at the K-12 level in North Carolina. The Burroughs Wellcome Fund really needs to get into this space. And so we began to develop the capacity of some of the institutions that are already in North Carolina, such as the North Carolina School of Science and Math, mm-hmm. to have further reach in the state. And so we gave them a catalytic grant of $1 million, which they eventually matched with like $23 million to set up a set of cyber campuses across North Carolina. We also invested in a collaborative program for the science museums in North Carolina. Did you know there are more than 20 science museums across North Carolina?
No.
And that these are now working together to do some programming that matches the course of study in the school so that they are supporting what's happening at the schools in North Carolina. So we think mm-hmm. that has been a very successful activity. And we also have gotten involved in the policy arena in North Carolina because we felt that our policymakers really have great good intentions of doing what's right by our schools. But legislators, there's a lot of turnover in our legislators, and so we have funded the Public School Forum to put together an institute for policymakers.
I see.
So that they can understand what are best practices not only around the world but in the United States and adopt those for North Carolina. And finally, one of the activities that we have started is a North Carolina Center for Science and Math and Technology Education to provide the glue to bring all these activities together mm-hmm. in North Carolina. And we have Sam Houston, who directs that center and has been very active in trying to bring that community together so that we can improve what we're doing in North Carolina.
So that's actually reaching out mainly to the teaching community?
Well, we have made a recent grant to the North Carolina system to provide scholarship and incentive dollars for people who major in science to get their teaching credential at the same time. Because one of the things that has been a problem is that people who are teaching science and math at the K-12 level don't have the content that they should have. Mm-hmm. And the studies all show that people who have strong content are better teachers in that area. I mean, it makes sense, right?
Sure.
But so we are, with Erskine Bowles' help, have given them this kind of a grant, and four institutions in the system are going to be putting together this kind of a program coming up.
I see. Well, generally speaking, Kata, how do you think we're doing in terms of really turning things around when it comes to science education? This has been, you know, certainly identified as a national crisis. Do you think we're meeting the challenge at this point, or do we still have a lot of catching up to do?
We have a lot of work to do. I think North Carolina has been remarkable. I think Governor Hunt was just a fabulous education governor. He helped get us catalyzed and on a good path. But you know what? Everybody else has been catching up, and the early gains, we're not making the gains we'd like to see at this point. So I think we really need to recommit in this space. Governor Easley has put some very important programs in place, but I think we really need to pay attention to this space because we're in a global economy now. Mm-hmm. Science mm-hmm. And math are going to be the basis of real economic drivers, just for the starters. But because science plays such an important role in just our everyday life in North Carolina and everybody's everyday life, we need to have an educated citizenry that can make good decisions about policy content that's going to be very much affected by science and technology. Mm-hmm, and they need mm-hmm. to support science and math advances.
And certainly North Carolina, Triangle area in particular, has been such a driver of that over the last really three or four decades even.
It has, and we have a lot of really great jobs as a result. Mm-hmm. But it needs to be more widespread, and we need to make sure that all our children coming along really are well educated and strong in math and science, of course, also in English and all the other things, but it's especially important, I think. It's easier to get that content than it is sometimes the math and the science content that is so necessary.
Absolutely. Well, how do you see teaching methods evolving to improve science and math education at the K-12 level, and how is the fund supporting innovations in that area?
Well, I think it's really interesting what's happening. We're learning a lot more about how people learn mm-hmm. and how children learn. And there's just no question that a hands-on inquiry, problem-solving approach is one that we need to emphasize and do a lot more. It's also harder to teach that way.
Sure.
So teachers really need to have the skills to do that kind of teaching. So I think there's a change that needs to take place in our schools of education and in enabling people to do that. And I think we also have to really make a strong effort to recognize our great teachers. We really have a lot of excellent, dedicated teachers. They deserve our respect. They deserve
they deserve better pay.
And they definitely deserve better pay. I
sure.
agree with you totally. So I think it's important to raise the level of teachers in our society. They are professionals, and linking them in to particularly those that teach science to as scientific professionals to the science community, I think is an important issue.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know we're seeing more and more programs being initiated that do exactly that, what about the shortage we've been experiencing of qualified science and math teachers in recent years? Do you see that situation improving, or are we still facing an uphill battle to attract people to these teaching careers as opposed to the opportunities they have in industry, government, or academic science?
Well, I think it's all about pay. You know, I think that has a lot to do with it. I'm mm-hmm. hoping that this it hasn't been possible to get both a scientific degree and a teaching credential at the same time. So I'm hoping this new innovation in North Carolina will work. It's been tried in Texas and California with very good effect to get more teachers in. We also know that there's been a lot of support for people changing careers, you know, who have already been in industry, who now want to address teaching to make that shift. I think there's a credentialing issue there as well, but I think North Carolina has been trying to facilitate that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I know there is certain groups are trying incentive pay to see if they can attract new people. Particularly Guilford County, I think, has been trying incentive pay for math teachers because they've had a real shortage there. So if we see some of these pilots working, then I think we can make more investments in that area. We just need to know what does work.
Sure. And is there a patchwork around the state in terms of this being a problem? I mean, I would imagine that that here in the Triangle, we probably don't really face too much of a shortage of science and math teachers as compared to the eastern part of the state or the mountains or some of those other
regions. Well, I think it certainly is more of a problem in the low wealth areas of the state, but mm-hmm. Guilford County still, you'd think, had access to a lot of talent, and it's still a problem there. We have a large number of teachers retiring. We are not. I think we need 10,000 teachers. I think we produce 3,000 teachers a year. So there's mm-hmm. just a gap in what's being produced and what we're going to need going forward.
And at the university level, are there being incentives for young people to get their degrees and then stay in the state and teach?
Well, I think certainly the program that we're starting, we're supporting juniors and seniors with scholarship dollars, and then we're providing incentive pay if they go into science and math teaching in North Carolina for 5 years following their degree. So we're hoping that will have some effect to keep them in North Carolina.
I see. Well, that sounds like could be a very effective program, because one of the things about living in North Carolina, as I'm sure you've experienced, once you come here, you don't want to go anywhere else.
Well, I think that's right. It's a wonderful place to be, so that should help. And living conditions are good, so that means we have a lot to work with, but we need to pay attention to this space.
Absolutely. Well, Kata, where do you see the Borough's Welcome Fund going from here? Are there any new initiatives on the horizon at this point?
Well, we do have a new program that we're going to be starting. It's going to be a training program, again, young scientists, probably at the PhD and postgrad level. We see that there's this huge revolution in genomics, with lots and lots of data being produced. And we see real public health needs, and we see gaps in people who are well-trained both in the population sciences like epidemiology and the computational mathematics side of things, and the genomics, molecular biology community. So we're going to try to put in place a new program to support institutional training programs to develop that individual that can work at that interface, bring together sort of the genomics, phenomics, and population sciences. Because really, the largest advances in health have come from our public health measures to a large degree. So we need to bring that molecular biology into that whole arena.
So it's really trying to leapfrog that particular type of translation.
Yeah. And Ernie, I'd like to tell you a little bit about a program. I noticed that one of your supporters is the Hamner Institute. And
yes.
We've provided a large grant to Ken Cutler, who they are housing and providing support for there.
Who has been a guest on this program.
Has he? Well, mm-hmm. then he is one of those Pied Pipers of science. He
right.
has really been magical in his ability to draw particularly minority students into science and to give them the preparation that they need to be successful at the graduate level. And Ken was so successful in his small program that he had in Durham that we've provided him with a large grant to take it North Carolina wide, and the Hamner Institute is providing him the support that he needs to really do that. So we're really very pleased to be providing that kind of support, because I think one of the big problems has been is that we don't have a scientific community that looks like the community that is going to be the majority population in the United States.
Sure.
And we need to be sure to really get those underrepresented minorities into science. And we need them in teaching as well. So this is an across-the-board issue.
Absolutely, and he is doing a terrific job with it. It's, I believe it's called Project Succeed.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, Keita, I wanted to ask you in some of the remaining time we have together today about the overall philosophy embodied by the Burroughs Welcome Fund. I know, as we were talking about a little bit before we went on the air, I've known many people who worked for Burroughs Welcome Company, and everybody remembers it very fondly as a wonderfully supportive place to work and conduct research, and almost more like an academic environment than a corporate one. Do you think that legacy, that type of philosophy, has survived in some fashion to this day with the Burroughs Welcome Fund?
Well, I really hope so. I think certainly we've taken the mission. Some of our early leaders, George Hitchings, Trudy Ellion, who was on the board for many years, brought that ethos to us. We took their strong support for young scientists and built it into our major strategies for carrying out our work. And then we've tried to work closely with our awardees to create a culture within which they can work with each other. And we always say that you're a part, once you're an awardee, you're part of the Burroughs Welcome Fund family. Our board members are a member of that family. Our advisory committees are a member of that family. Of course, our staff and our awardees. So we really consider that you have become part of this legacy, this wonderful legacy, and are really supportive of innovation, creation, and research as a basis of future advancement in the country.
It sounds like the short answer to that long question was yes.
Yes.
Well, Keita, as you approach your own retirement next year, I'm sure you've taken the opportunity to reflect back on your very distinguished career, and my introduction didn't even touch on all of the very impressive things you've done. Well, what have been some of the highlights for you over the years?
Well, I think there's nothing as energizing as when you hear these young awardees presenting their science and telling you about what they've been able to achieve as a result of their awards. I think I would say that's number one. Number two is really the spectacular staff that I have at the Burroughs Welcome Fund. You know, if you're a good leader, what you do is pick really smart people, and they do all the work, and you get all the credit. But that's been a huge reward. But, you know, the work that we've been doing to try to bring attention to the need for science and math education in North Carolina has really been an area that where I think we've made some difference. And one of the things that we're trying to do now is really work very closely with the North Carolina Grant Makers Organization to bring together the grant making community around what our education needs in North Carolina so that we can develop a strategic approach to fund making by a lot of different funders across North Carolina. I think we all feel that we want to make a difference. And I think one of the big problems in North Carolina is that there's a lot of disconnectedness. Mm-hmm. And a lot of good things get started, and then for whatever reason, the person leaves or whatever, they don't continue, and there are a lot of separate activities going on. But I think we need to be much more strategic, because it's going to take us all working together to really advance this cause in North Carolina. And so I'm really delighted by work of our center, where they're trying to provide that glue or the go-to place where everybody who's interested in science and math education, K-12 education in North Carolina, can go to, as well as the efforts that we're doing with our legislators and our awardees in the state who are really working in that venue.
I see. Well, that sounds like a terrific program to bring that kind of blanket coordination to these many efforts, because there certainly are many efforts out there in that arena.
I'm sure you've probably had a lot of them on your program.
Well, more than a few, more than a few. Well, what are your plans, Kate? With everything you are involved with, somehow I cannot picture you just going fishing 5 days a week.
Well, you know, I've been mulling over a lot of things, and sort of one of my thoughts is, first of all, my husband and I are both from Virginia, so we're going back to Virginia. And one of the things I've been thinking about since I've been working so closely with North Carolina legislators is maybe running for the Virginia legislature and continue my advocacy on behalf of science and math education. But we'll see. That all takes getting involved in the policy process there, and we've been away from Virginia for a number of years, and so I'll have to get into that.
Well, we'd love to keep you here in North Carolina.
Thank you.
So one thing I did want to ask you a little bit more about is you did spend many years at the Institute of Medicine, and that is a subject I don't think we've ever actually explored on this program, and would kind of like to give our listeners just a little bit of a feel for what that body is and the kinds of activities that they do.
Well, the Institute of Medicine is part of the National Academy of Sciences, which mm-hmm. was sort of the first organization that was established. And it's a very interesting organization. It was established as an honorary group, but the Congress provided it a charter because it wanted to get the best advice from the leading scientists of the country. And there is also a National Academy of Engineering, and there's an Institute of Medicine, which is sort of the three honorific societies. But they all work on policy activities for the U.S. government. They are not a government agency. They are a nonprofit with a charter from the Congress to respond to requests from the government about policy matters. So the Institute of Medicine has a full panoply of studies that they're working on, from vaccine safety to Agent Orange, effects of Agent Orange, to funding for research, to any of the major sort of quality of care, et cetera. And they produce these series of studies that then inform government work on this or that activity. And I worked as a study director there, and then I ran two different divisions there, one on health sciences policy and one on health promotion, disease prevention, and eventually became the executive officer of the organization.
I see. Now, the executive, as executive officer, what kinds of duties did you have in that position?
Well, it's mainly, helping the division directors develop the program of the organization and working at the direction under the direction of the president, who really is the outside face of the organization. I was sort of the COO, of the operating officer that sort of worked closely with the program staff to make sure that we got the best committees together to do the studies, and then all the work of that organization is peer-reviewed, much in the way that our activities have peer review committees to select the awardees who make recommendations then to our board.
I see. Well, that must have been just tremendously valuable experience preparing you for your leadership of the Burroughs Welcome Fund.
It was terrific because I met a lot of the leading scientists in the country and also had a very good view on what was science policy.
So you had your network well in place.
It was a very good network, but obviously, you as they say, you never have a problem about getting a free lunch when you're at a foundation. So it's been once you're at a foundation, you're also able to keep that network going.
There you go. Well, come next year when you retire, that free lunch is going to be drying up on you.
Okay, that's right.
But then you're talking about jumping into the world of politics, so maybe there'll be some more free lunches there.
We'll see.
Well, Kate Abond, it's been a fantastic hour, and on behalf of Radio In Vivo and by extension, really the entire Triangle Science community, if I can take that onto myself, I want to thank you for your years of service and the important contributions made by the Burroughs Welcome Fund to the scientific enterprise, and wish you all the best as you approach your retirement.
Thank you, Ernie. I should say the same to you for your work.
Well, thank you. Well, we've got some terrific guests lined up in the coming weeks here on Radio In Vivo. You can check out the website, which is radioinvivo.net, for the upcoming lineup, which is updated regularly as we book new appearances. So please join us again next time for Radio In Vivo, your link to the Triangle Science community, right here on volunteer-powered WCOM-FM, Carrboro and Chapel Hill. And if you enjoy the program, we do ask that you please make an effort to support the station by volunteering, contributing, or underwriting our programming. See you again next time.